So this evening we're going to begin that study on authority, and the first lesson is really just going to be defining the word authority. And there's several approaches we could take. We could just open a dictionary. We could turn to some, quote, experts like Vine and Thayer's, and I've got some of their definitions here. But what we also more so want to do is I want to go through scriptures that use the word authority that will help us see what all is involved in this word authority and in the concept of authority. So if you look at the top of your page there, we have understanding the meaning of authority, defining authority, and then also understanding the various aspects of authority from scriptures that use that word. There's well over 100 verses in the New Testament that use the word authority. So we're certainly not going to go through all those, but looking at some representative uses of the word to help us understand different aspects, various aspects of the meaning of authority. And before we do that, the other thing I want to mention is that we're not intending, when we look at these scriptures, this is difficult to do, but we're not intending to, you might say, glean everything that we can from that scripture. We're just trying to understand what that scripture teaches us about the word authority tonight. I may personally stray from that a little bit in what I've written up here in this outline, but that wasn't my intention. I'm trying to stick to define authority. So just those are the two objectives there. Before we do that, though, just an idea of where we're trying to go with the class is, you know, my intention is to get out to you ahead of time an outline, perhaps with some questions that you can think about, but certainly with an outline with some scriptures and some ideas so that when you come, we're prepared to discuss as opposed to the way it is tonight. The other thing is just to lay out an idea of where we are going with the different classes. After this one, I'd like us to talk about why we need authority, where the idea of authority is applicable, not just, you might say, in the spiritual realm, but how that the idea of authority extends into every aspect of our life, of course. Then the idea of whether authority in the spiritual realm is subjective or is it objective. Then I'd like us to look at the idea that we're all familiar with, and that is that the ultimate source of authority is God. And then I want us to talk about what is not our authority. I think that's important to talk about what is not our authority today. What is our authority today in the spiritual realm, particularly Christ and His apostles? And then authority, maybe earlier we'll do this, but authority as we see that in action in the Old Testament, because I think it will help to see the examples there. And then the idea of how divine authority is expressed to us in the scriptures. Okay? And then the idea of inductive reasoning, and then the ideas of generic and specific authority, expediency, silence, some other more specific topics as we look at how we determine our right or even our duty to do things. Does anyone have any questions or comments about that? Appreciate your feedback, whether during the class or after, about where we're going or how it's being conducted. I intend for this not to be a lecture, and so I want your participation tonight. So let's just go right into it. A lot of what you're going to see on the slides is what is in the outline that you have then. I don't promise that every time I give you an outline it's going to be as detailed, But I'm working from the same thing you're working from with just some additional notes. But we want to define the word authority. And, of course, words change meaning, but it would be best to see what the Bible says about the word authority. First of all, note that there are several Greek words that are translated authority, but we're going to concentrate on one of them. The lion's share of it is this one word that's in your outline too, and I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's Strong's number 1849, and I believe 1850 is a derivative of it, and it's used over 108 times in the New Testament. And this is what Vine then has to say about it. The word translated authority, this particular one, denotes authority. And this is interesting from the impersonal verb exestai, it is lawful. And we're going to get into this idea of authority and law. There's a connection, of course. And I know everybody says, well, no, duh. But let's see that in the scriptures. From the meaning of, it's from the meaning of leave or permission or liberty of doing as one pleases. Then it passed on to have the idea of the ability or strength with which one is endued. And then it morphed into this idea of the power of authority, the right to exercise power. And there's some scriptures given, some of those we will look at. The power of rule or government, the power of one whose will and commands must be obeyed by others. And he gives some examples here, Vines does, and more specifically, apostolic authority. So just to give us an idea of this word authority, what all is involved in it. Any thoughts or any comments? I know you're seeing this stuff for the first time. Not that you haven't studied it before. Authority defined Greek, Thayer's, and this is in your outline also. Thayer says the power of choice, liberty of doing as one pleases, leave or permission. But then there's some four definitions, maybe more, under this word that he has. He has quite an extensive description. But physical and mental power, the ability or strength with which one is endued, which he either possesses or exercises, the power of authority or influence and of right. We'll look at Matthew 21:23. The power of rule or government, the power of him whose will and commands must be submitted to by others and obeyed, generally translated authority. And he gives Matthew 28:18 as an example. Let's move on. I want to look at what some definitions are from the dictionary that really don't contradict anything we've seen so far, and then draw out some key words that we want to look for as we go through some scriptures. So authority, according to American Heritage Dictionary, I believe this is the one most recent dictionary we bought, but the power to enforce laws, exact obedience, command, determine, or judge. And then this one is from a 1940s something dictionary that belonged to my mom in college that I got had through my years of school. Legal or rightful power, a right to command or to act, jurisdiction. Okay. If we were to, when we walk away from this class tonight, if you remember one thing, I believe, about what the word authority means, it would be simply the last part of this definition, the right to command or the right to act. The right to command or the right to act. We'll see in a moment that that all has to do with who has the ultimate right to command, I'm asking. God has the ultimate right to command. He has all power and all authority. From our perspective, I'm not concerned about the right to command anybody, but I'm concerned about the right to do what? To act. And the word means that side of it also, the right to act. So if we put all this together, there are some key words associated with authority, and that is power. When I think of power, I think more of the idea of ability, but it's translated authority. So we'll see this in a moment, that when the word authority is used in the New Testament, it seems to me that sometimes the emphasis is more on the power behind that as opposed to the right to do it or the right to do something. Okay? We'll see that. We can discuss that, but power. And one of the definitions of power has in it strength, ability, power to enforce. Okay? Enforce was one of the words we've seen, and it's in one of these dictionary definitions. Laws. Obedience has come out to command, judge, right, and act, as in action, acting, doing something. So these are key words associated with the idea of authority. And I want us to then go through some scriptures and see then how these concepts come out and what they teach us about authority. Does anyone have any questions at this point? Chris, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. All right. Matthew chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8 is the first place we want to go. And I want us to read more than just verse 9. But this is fairly early, as I understand, in Jesus' ministry. It's after he preached or taught the sermon, what's called the Sermon on the Mount. That's at least how it's arranged, I believe, in when we went through the study of the life of Christ. But then in verse 5, Jesus is in Galilee then. Now when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, pleading with him, saying, "Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented." And Jesus said to him, "I will come and heal him." The centurion answered and said, "Lord, I'm not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak a word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this one, 'Go,' and he goes, and to another, 'Come,' and he comes, and to my servant, 'Do this,' and he does it." When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed, "Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel." Well, this brings out several ideas of authority, and I've arranged them in some cases by pulling the quotes of what's in the Bible, at least from one of the versions. Here's the picture: a centurion, a Roman centurion. He has this servant who is home paralyzed. Jesus says, "I can heal him. I don't even need to come and," or the man says, Jesus says, "I'll come and heal him." And the man says, "Oh, don't come into my house. I'm not worthy. But if you'll just say the word, my servant will be healed." Now, first of all, there's an expression of faith on his part. But what we want to key in on is verse 9, because he says, "For I too am a man under authority." Now, there's two ways I could take this. He's speaking to Jesus. I could take it that I recognize, Jesus, that you have the power to heal this man, but you're under the authority of your Father in heaven. I believe there is that aspect of Jesus while he's on earth. I'm not sure I fully understand it, but Jesus was, as the Son, was obedient to his Father, and he said, I'm here to do my Father's will. He was in submission to his Father, even though he's deity. Okay? But I don't think that's really the idea there, as much as it is this: I too am a man under authority who says, "Go do this, go do that," to the people under me. And just the same, I believe you, Jesus, can say, "You be healed," and you have such authority, power, right to do such a thing. That's what he's saying. So I want us to recognize that this man recognized, and this shows the idea that authority involves power. Involves power to do something. Jesus had power to say that. He believed he did. This centurion did. Jesus did have power to do that. He had authority. And so, again, verse 9. I also am a man under authority. Under authority. So, let me... Any thoughts on that? Yes, Guy?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So the next point I had here was, he says, I too am a man under authority. I'm under authority. I'm under, here's some words, remember, rule. I'm under command. I'm under rule of someone else above me. Every man has a head except God. Every man has a head. I as far as I know. And he says, I am a man under authority. And so this points out, and then he says, I have soldiers under me. This points out this, a chain of authority. It points out the idea of one having the right to command and another having, in this case, an obligation or a duty to submit. He has people under him who must submit to him. He has the right to command them. And he himself is under the command of someone above him. And he has the right, because he's been given the right, to command those underneath him. Anyway, are we seeing then both sides of this? The right to command and also the right to act. The right to command and the right to act. Jesus has the right and the power to command, and this man recognizes it. He has the authority, Jesus does. And this man says, I'm just like that. He says, I'm under authority, but I have people under me. Just like Jesus, the spirits and the diseases and everything are under your power, your authority. So what we're seeing is, I think, more of the meaning of authority and this idea of right to command, right to act. Any thoughts on this? Yes, Chris. Are you clarifications or contradictions, whatever?
I know this isn't the point of mm-hmm. class, but there's a huge lesson in faith on the man. Because he believes, it's like, just say the word.
Just say the word.
He recognizes the authority, but he has the faith that is true.
That's right. And this centurion had similar authority, because did he need to say, please, soldiers, go do this, kind of, if you want to, maybe tomorrow? All he had to do was say a word, and they went. And that's power. That's, yes, got
it. So, I was kind of pondering this. So the action is that he's able to give the command. Is that the act? I mean, because he gives the command to the soldier to go, and he goes. So is that the act, that he goes, or is the act that he commanded him to go?
Well, both are acts, but I think the one under authority is acting, and he's... And that fits the definition of authority is the right, or in this case, even the obligation to act. And the one above has the right to command. But in his case, he only has the right to command, which is also an act, because someone above him, he says, I'm under authority. It brings out the two aspects of authority. Is that getting at your question or anywhere close?
I think it is, but I'm not sure I'm understanding. So, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes, Chris.
It seems that just the way I understand how you're just talking of the right to act is like a person has the, they have the authority to do something, just like we have authority to do what we need to do in the spiritual realm. It seems that in this context, and with that in mind, there's not a lot of that there. There's not a lot of act. There's just the right to command. The man recognized the authority in Christ, that he has the power to command, but as far as the right to act, I don't see there's none of that here, at least on man's, not Christ's part, but on man's part, right?
I see your point. It's
I don't
not
know if that's what God's thinking too. But.
It's not so much. So we have three levels here with this man. He refers to three levels. He says, I'm under authority, implying what? There's someone above him, and he's not talking about God. There's someone above him commanding him. And that only through that does he have the right to act by commanding others. And those under him, a third level, have the right to act. They don't go if he doesn't say go. And they don't, what does he say? They don't come if he doesn't say come. If he says come, they come. And if he says go, they go. They have the right to do that, which is authority. They have the authority to do that. Those down there, they have the right if he commands them. If he commands them. He exercises authority over them. So there's the two sides, exercising authority and responding to one who had the right to exercise that authority over you. Does this make sense? We're concerned with acting. We're concerned with, can I do something? Why? Spiritually, we don't command each other. We have Christ as the one commanding us. Authority is the right to act. You and I are concerned with the right to act in accordance with the one who has the right to command us. That's the two parts of authority. If you could say two parts. That's where it gets back to that definition, the right to command, which doesn't concern me other than with my family. I could say, okay, yes, there's right to command in the family, but right to act spiritually. When we get into this further in the study and we're talking about what the church can do and things like that, we're concerned with what we can do, not what we command others. We're concerned with what the one above us commanded us. Yes?
Even when we do command others, we are still, there's still that higher authority that we have to have the right. Even though we're in a position of authority as fathers and husbands.
That's right.
And, you know, leaders in our neighborhood or whatever, we still have to have the right.
Yes.
To command from our father.
That's right. Yep. I believe it gets back to the fact that every man has a head except God. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, the head of every woman is man, the head of man is Christ, and the head of Christ is God. I think he has in mind the Father. So here's the chain, and we get in trouble when we don't recognize that we have someone we're answering to. And even in our families, whatever responsibility, we're answering to God. When we're out here on the street, am I my own head? In a country of anarchy, I suppose. In this country, no. Yes?
I'm just kind of confused on the way we're using the word right. You know, if somebody is under your leadership, you give them a command, they're do the command. It's not a right to do the command. If they don't do the command, they're in trouble.
That's right. It's more of an obligation. It's a duty.
It's a duty.
Right. That's right. Yeah. And we're going to see that, in fact, in a couple bullet points.
If I have a right, that means I have a choice. To me, I see it that if I have the right, I have the choice.
Yeah, I could see people saying, yep, yep. In fact, the word right means power or privilege, rightly entitled to. So I see your point, and a couple of bullet points down, we're going to talk about obligation and submission. But that's why I've said, when we talked about these under his authority, it's not so much right, but obligation. He actually has an obligation to obey. And that's one of those words, obedience. And we'll see that come out.
Yeah, along that thought, I mean, if, you know, we're commanded to act, worship, to sing to God. He's given us that ability. I mean, we're privileged to be able to do that. He didn't give that to animals, you know, to dogs or something. They can't do that. He didn't give them that authority. They can't. But we're not only supposed to do it, but he's given us that privilege too.
Right. Correct. Okay, so he has soldiers under him. He has the right to command or order or rule them. Now, someone says, well, it's an obligation. I get the point. But the man above him, the buck stops somewhere. And the buck stops with a man. If we're talking in physical realms, the buck stops somewhere with a man who has the right to command. He has the right to command or to order or to rule. We know spiritually that the buck stops where? With God. Right? God has all inherent right to command. But just looking at the idea of authority, just generally speaking, we're trying to pull out these ideas of right. The next one here, implied power to enforce. So this man who says to his servants, or to those, as he calls them, those under him, soldiers under him, he says, go and they go and come and they come. There's an implied power to enforce such too. Okay? So authority can involve the idea of power to enforce. That doesn't apply to me. If God says be baptized, what am I enforcing? See, so just get the point. There's many aspects of this authority. I would not say that because we are authorized to sing that I have the power to enforce that. Are you understanding? There's different aspects of this. This doesn't apply to each level. Okay? There's an implied power to enforce. The soldiers can't enforce anything. Who gets to enforce? The man who has the right to command. He enforces that. He has power. Authority carries the idea of the right and the power to enforce. Not if I'm under authority. Okay? We're looking at all aspects of authority. We're looking at the one who commands and has the right to command, and the one who is underneath and acts. Is that clear? We could approach this class entirely from a human perspective and just say, what do we have the right and the duty to do? This is a class, this particular class is stepping back to say, who has the right to command? Because that is part of the definition of authority. And that's what Jesus has. That's what Jesus has in Matthew 8. In Matthew 8, verse 9, that the centurion recognizes. He has the right and the power. And I think it's more than right, it's power. And that's another aspect that we want to kind of see as we go through these verses. We can't just throw out the word right, and we can't throw out the word power, can't throw out the word enforce, can't throw out the word obedience, submission, duty. I'm trying to get us to see all these aspects of authority. Does anyone have any comments, questions, clarifications, or appreciate any clarity? Yes, Chris?
They're all slightly different, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have their place. You know, just like Troy was mentioning, obligation versus right.
Right.
And you said maybe we get into that, but there can be a difference as to
right
how those are applied, but it still comes, obviously comes out to
right. Obligation to do. Obligation to do, to act based on what is ordered. It's the idea of submission. And that's what the centurion, he's not inspired, but the centurion is bringing out a truth here that's recorded for us. Not everything that's in the Bible is true, but this is a truth that he spoke. Did you get what I meant by everything in the Bible is not true? Someone could speak a falsehood in the Bible, okay, and it's recorded, but that doesn't make it true. The other thing that I want to point out on this last one, you know, obligation to do what is ordered, it has to be recognized by those under authority. I mean, there's a big problem if the soldier doesn't recognize. See, this is where it comes to us. If he does not recognize that he's under the authority of that one above him, that's a big problem. That's why we're having this class, is to study from our perspective, our obligations, our right to act. I don't know if I can.
Because, so, we have two different things going on here. We have the one that has authority to command. But the obligation to act is somebody totally different.
Correct, except in this case the centurion actually has both. But yes. The centurion is under someone else.
Well,
so he has an obligation.
Yeah, but
and he has a right to command. But
I guess I was thinking of it in a specific situation. If somebody has authority to tell somebody to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he has that authority to do. The obligation to do that is not him, it's somebody else.
The obligation is the one who was commanded to do it. Is
right.
That your point? Yes. Right.
And that is, he's acting based on the authority the one above him has.
Well, this is where...
So we have an obligation. To do what is ordered, to be in submission, but that's not a position of authority.
No, it isn't.
I have an obligation to do something because somebody told me to do it because they have authority to do it. But I'm not doing it because of authority, I'm doing it because I'm in submission to the one that has authority.
That's right. But we would all also admit that we use the word authority in this sense. Are we authorized to do something? Are we authorized to do something? We say that all the time, and I think
I'm
scripturally so.
To do something because of the authority the one had in telling me what to do.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's your right to act, and you don't have that right unless the one above commanded. Is that, did I say that right? You don't have the right to act unless the one who has the right to command you gave you that right. Some things are, I would say, obviously some things are duty and obligation. on our part, but some things are also a right to do. Well, do I have a right? Do I have a right to have a building? We don't have an obligation to. Do we have a right to? That's again, that gets back to the definition. I'm not trying to force a definition here, but the definition back in the beginning, and we've only gotten to two scriptures or one, but is the right to command. That's from the one who has authority or power or right to command. And then from our perspective, it's do I have the right to do? Or, as is brought out here, do I have actually the obligation to do? And I only have that. How do I have that? I don't make that up out of thin air. How did they have that obligation? It was commanded. Yes?
See, I've been the middleman almost my entire working career, where I had somebody above me and then I had the people below me.
Yes.
And the people above me told me what to do, and then it was up to me to make sure that the people underneath me carried out what we were told to do. Now, did I have the right not to pass that on to them? I did. But if I didn't pass it on to them, then I was the one that would be in trouble for it.
Right.
So I didn't really have the right to make choices. I had to carry out the orders or the direction that was given to me to make sure that they accomplished that.
That's right.
Or I was in trouble if I didn't do it, and if they didn't do it, then they were going to be in trouble. I mean, I've had to terminate people before. It was a horrible feeling, but
yeah,
it wasn't that I had the power to do so because the people above me gave me that authority.
Yep. All right. So that's exactly Matthew 8. The right, in this case the obligation, the duty to act.
Yeah.
Yes?
Then there's always the case of 1 Corinthians 11, like you read, the order of submission, that we're in a place of leadership in our job or something, but or we're the ones doing something that we've been told to do. However, we have to go all the way to our highest authority, which is God. And if it ever violates that, then even though we've been told, as from our employer to do something,
right,
and now we are obligated to do this. However, doing that, we're not authorized from God to
right.
do such a thing because of whatever it is. Maybe we're supposed to lie about something. Or steal something. Absurd, but it happens. And
right.
There's always that. We are ultimately submit
yep.
to the will of the Father.
All right. Any other thoughts? Let's go to Matthew 21. You may disagree with this one, or with what I've said in the outline on this, on right. But again, I believe this is a case of right. A right. As opposed to the idea, as I understand it here, is not a question of who gave you this obligation. But anyway, let's read it. Matthew 21, verse 23. Now when he came into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people confronted him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority?" But Jesus answered and said to them, I will also ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, where was it from? From heaven or from men? And they reasoned among themselves, saying, if we say from heaven, he will say to us, why then did you not believe him? But if we say from men, we fear the multitude, for all count John as a prophet. So they answered Jesus and said, we do not know. And he said to them, neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things. Okay. So I understand this could be read as obligation. By what authority is the question. What has Jesus done here? Jesus had gone through the temple and cast out the money changers. People had said, Son of David, to him, which that really got under the skin, because that meant something. That meant something about the Christ. He's been teaching, he's healing. In fact, in verse 15, they saw, the chief priests and scribes saw the wonderful things that he did, because the blind and the lame, verse 14, came to him in the temple and he healed them. There had been undeniable proof of miracles here, but their response in verse 15 was they were angry. Jesus was not a priest. He's a priest now, but he was no priest of the Levitical priesthood. He's not a scribe. He's no Pharisee. He's no member of the Sanhedrin. And he's not an appointee of Caesar by any means. Where is his authority? Where's his right? Where's his power to do what he is doing? Where's his right and his power? Who gave you this power? Who gave you this right? Now, frankly, they're angry about him. And they're not asking, I don't believe, asking a question, where did you get this ability? Because power can mean ability. They're wanting to know who appointed you to do this. Who appointed you to do this? If you haven't been appointed to do this, you have no right to be here doing this. To come into this temple and cast people out. And so again, right to act by way of being appointed here to do it. They say, who gave you this authority? They recognize the need to have authority for him to do what he was doing. Jesus acknowledged it in the way that he answered their question. One must be given the right, or if we're talking about an obligation or a duty, one must be given, they must be granted, commanded to do something by someone who has the right to do that. And we've already talked about that to some extent, but authority, the authority or the right to do something, or the duty or obligation to do it, is based upon it being commanded by one who has the right to command it, one who has the right to enforce it, and we'll see too, one who has the right to judge when we're talking spiritual. But does anyone have any thoughts on that? Yes?
Just the... I just can't help but think of today and how people would never even face something like this. We went to somebody and said, you know, who gave you the right to do that? Right? I mean, the people recognized the need for authority, and that's kind of the end of the story. There was a need for authority. They thought something that was contrary to at least their knowledge, and you got to have authority for everything that we do.
Yeah. Two possible sources of authority. This is getting off track a little bit from what the purpose of this class is, to define authority. But there's two possible sources of authority or right or power. The one doesn't mean much in our book, and that's human. And so someone may say, well, by human authority, that is by the power vested in the Pope or whatever, then they're doing this or whatever, right? Garbage, I know. But Jesus pointed out that this, I'm going to say even this, you could say command or right. I don't think it's so much power here, but command or right. This command or right of Jesus to do this, it's from divine origin, inasmuch as John the Baptist's baptism was of divine origin. It wasn't of human calculation. It wasn't of human origin. And so it's coming from above, but where from above? Human or divine? Devised humanly or commanded, appointed by God? Any thoughts on that? And Jesus taught us that we need to be concerned with divine authority. There's human authorities. Of course, they're appointed by God, Romans 13. But we're to be more concerned with divine authority. And that is, of course, when in cases where man's laws contradict God's, then we're supposed to be concerned. And we place God's laws above man's. Matthew 9:6. Remember, I believe this is the paralytic. And Jesus told the man, your sins are forgiven, but that you may know that the Son of Man has power. I don't know what the New American Standard has. May have authority, but it's the word authority. That you may know that the Son of Man has power on earth to forgive sins. I just say this, going back to our definitions from Vines, Thayer's, the dictionaries that talk about right, that authority having to do with right, God has inherent right to command everybody. Jesus is divine. I believe in this case they're more concerned with the power to be able to forgive sins. That rests in divine nature, to be able to forgive sins and to forgive sins on earth. And so I think of more the power aspect of authority here. The ability. John 19:11. Jesus is before Pilate, before his crucifixion. And regarding the authority, Pilate said in verse 10, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have power? That's authority there. I have authority to crucify you and authority or power to release you. Jesus said you could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has a greater sin. Authority, the right. Pilate, you don't have the right to do anything except God had given you the right. But here's my thought on this. Jesus has in mind more what the New King James translated, and that is the power or the ability, the strength to do that, as in the power to enforce something. Do you see the flavor of the difference? Or the idea of power being the power to enforce something? That's part of this idea of authority. And Jesus points out that it's granted by God. And of course, it's because God has all inherent authority. And Romans 13 tells us that the power of the authorities are appointed by God. So they would have no power or authority except it was given to them. Granted. Jesus said, I believe, given, didn't he? Any other That's a case where it's not commanded, but it's given. I think that's significant to recognize how this word is used here. Any other thoughts? We're out of time. I really didn't want to run out of time and not finish this, because I wanted to just, you know, finish it and button up a lesson and then be able to go to the next. I do think that we should not just throw out the rest of this, because we could, and you could look at it at home. But I think what we will do in 2 minutes is just turn to the back page, and when we come back next week, we'll pick up but where we left off here. But if we'll look at the recap on the back, we haven't seen all this yet, though, but authority includes the right to command. Authority includes the right to act. The right to act is granted by one who has the authority to grant that right. And there's two possible sources of authority, human and divine, and we ought to be concerned with the divine source. And I think that's about as far as we got. Does anyone have any thoughts or comments or clarifications? Or corrections, for that matter. I appreciate your participation, and hopefully we'll have just as lively a discussion next week.